welcome to the D1 Softball Podcast. I'm your host, Tara Henry. As always, we're excited to bring you the best of the best in college softball. After the show, head on over to d1softball.com. And if you like to get a subscription, an annual subscription, that's use podcast20, PODCAST20 for 20% off an annual subscription. Super excited today. We've got a great guest that will be following us on the show. First and foremost, Ree, how are you doing this week? I think both of us are just starting to catch up on some sleep after a long weekend at the St. Pete Clearwater Elite Invitational.
Yeah, it was, I'm starting to feel like, okay, I'm getting back to having some energy after that. It was amazing, awesome, but exhausting weekend. Just so much to take in all at once. And then, you know, now I'm starting to kind of digest. It's slowly like things come back where I'm like, oh, that's right, that happened, you know, but it was great. And I'm really just blessed that I was there. It was so fun. The environment was awesome. So just kind of riding a high after that for a little bit and then a little crash and now getting back up the climb again.
And this was your first time down there at the tournament, correct?
Correct. Yeah. First time.
So what did you kind of, as when you experienced, you showed up, there's, you know, there's two sets of fields. You've got 1 through 4 and then you've got 8 and 9. What was it like? You know, we all both covered it, but for you, it was your first time there. What was it like for you?
It like you said, it was a little overwhelming at points just because I wanted to see everything and you realize like quickly you can't see everything. So you got to pick your spots and really just be in the moment where you are and not worry about what's going on in other places. The cool thing is ESPN obviously has every game so you can go back and watch if you missed something, which was great. But it was great. I loved just the energy. I loved the people. I loved to learn. Like there are so many people from so many different places that came down to watch. Diversity of the conferences and the teams. Just everything about it was perfect. I mean, I really loved getting a chance to see so many different teams in one place and getting to see kind of just them in person and up close. And they're like, you get such an intimate view because that setup is not huge. I mean, it's big enough, but you can sit right next to the dugouts. You can hear people, you can see. And it was some great games. And I, you know, you get to see some performances that surprise you and some that, you know, kind of make you scratch your head, but just loved it. I loved interacting with the players and the coaches. Loved kind of getting to see them more after so many years of being kind of on Zoom all the time. So it was just great. Every year they want to make it bigger and better, but I kind of like some of the intimacy that they have. And I hope that never goes away because I think that's what makes that kind of special.
Yeah. And I actually took the trolley. I don't know if you saw that, but I took the trolley and was at fields 1 through 4 and 8 and 9 and found the best little tail greeter tent that was over there on fields 1 through 3. It was all you can eat for $40, all you can eat, all you can drink in this tent in left field. So they had it in left field on field 3. And then on field 1, they had it in left field as well. And sat and talked to some fans. And, you know, they had been there all day and they were just softball fans. They weren't parents of any of the players. You know, they didn't have, you know, one of their daughters played, but she was 11. She wasn't there. And I just was so happy to sit next to, you know, some true softball fans that were just there just to watch the games. And I think, like you said, I think ESPN has brought that experience to the East Coast because we'll talk about this in a little bit. The Marinetters heading up here this weekend here in California. And I think that tournament has been incredibly successful here. And now we're seeing another tournament on the East Coast kind of do the same thing, but at a bigger scale in terms of production and being having an exposure with that Sunday night game against Florida State and UCLA. And in terms of the tournament, what player stood out to you? Who did you kind of notice that you were or most surprised about when you saw in person that kind of impressed you the most?
Michaela Edenfield, FSU catcher. She's 6 foot tall. I mean, a catcher. And she's just strong. I mean, she's big and she's very, I got to talk to her, very personable, very, she just has a great makeup about herself. I mean, she's a redshirt freshman. She learned under Anna Shelnut. So she's not like, you know, completely not used to this, but was just very impressed with like her game and her off the field, on the field. That was one that immediately, I think if I had to put at the top of the list, I kind of had my eye on her from the first opening weekend. I think I saw that she threw out a few intrigues me. My person, I was really, really impressed with how she handled staff and kind of just, that's not an easy position to fill when Anna Shelnut was there and so beloved and stuff. And I was really impressed with her. And then Georgina Coric, I know we talk about her a lot, but I was more impressed with, I watched her intently during her start, just not even pitching. I watched her everything but pitching, and just her leadership and her activity in the dugout and just her like energy. That's something that's kind of sometimes rare in pitchers because they have to be so self-contained. That girl, man, she was just a fire starter everywhere. And so, I mean, there was many others, and with the whole Wisconsin team impressed me this week. I was really just seeing Kayla Kahn went back out was amazing. I mean, she brought energy too. So I could go through a list, but those jump out to me right away. How about you?
Yeah, I agree with you in terms of Wisconsin. They had a heck of a little tournament. They did go 3-3, but just fun to watch. Just scrappy, never out of it. And like you said, I think Kayla Conwin is a huge addition, and she just changes the makeup of that lineup. Just one player, it's so amazing how one player can have such a great impact on the lineup. Not, I don't think only in terms of her swing and her abilities at the plate, but I think as a leader, you can tell having her back on that Badgers team. I think they're a team to watch, and I think they might be causing a few upsets here heading into conference play in the Big Ten. So super impressed with Wisconsin. Like you said, Florida State, they just look really athletic and strong. And, you know, we were pretty vocal about their offense last year, or their lack of thereof. And when I interviewed Lonnie at the end of that, after that game against UCLA, and, you know, she was saying pretty much we have the pieces that we had last year, and we just added power, and there's a part of this offense that is just getting it done. It sounded like last year they were putting a lot of pressure on themselves, and feel like this year they're just a little bit more free swingers. They're putting the bat on the ball. They've got a plan. And in terms of players, Mac Leonard, she was impressive to see, and she's the transfer from Illinois State. I thought her, you know, just her stature, her swing, how she carries herself, it was impressive to watch her. And just, you know, in terms of watching UCLA, was able to watch UCLA and really pleased with Holly Acevedo. And I think, you know, Danielle will mention that later on in the interview, but Holly did a heck of a job. And I think this is the first time we got to see Holly work through some innings. And I think that is something that we'll watch and kind of look back to that game. It was a loss for the Bruins, but I do believe that now she's got the belief that she can get it done. And she held them. I think she sat down 7 straight batters against Florida State. So I was really impressed with Holly Acevedo. And then Northwestern, a heck of a game against UCLA. That walk-off, 3-run walk-off by Maeve Nelson. Just, there's something special about that team. They've got what we would say is the glue. I think there's, you know, this, like we talk about, this intangible quality that certain teams have, and they've got such a mix of, you know, some young kids, but they've got a veteran squad, and they're getting it done at the plate. And Danielle Williams, she threw a heck of, you know, she had a heck of a weekend. She did have a loss against Oklahoma State in that last game, but another team to watch in the Big Ten. I think it's going to be, you know, Northwestern, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota at the top there again. But, you know, I think the strength of the Big Ten is something that I'm keeping my eye on. And now that they're able to play out of conference this year, I think we're seeing that, hey, the Big Ten is right up there. And I think that's going to help them, obviously, in terms of the selection committee when that eventually does happen. So those are kind of my biggest takeaways from the tournament. And lastly, that last game on Sunday night, I stayed for it. You couldn't get a seat. I mean, it was
crazy. Like, yeah.
People had arrived in the morning and had not left their seats for almost 8 hours.
It was nuts. It was great. I knew it would be. The Florida State fans were nuts the whole time in a good way. those people are like, so, I mean, obviously they're closer. I mean, you know, the obvious, it's drivable. It's just different. But they're loyal and they're rabid in like the best way possible. I mean, the swarm for autographs with those girls after each game was just amazing to witness. So I wasn't surprised when you said that. Yeah, that was just an awesome environment. Great environment for softball.
It got to the point where they had moved that game that was on that field to field nine. They'd flipped it. And so the game that was supposed to actually be there before the UCLA Florida State game got moved. So that means the seats were vacant for 5 hours before game time. So they finally had to make an announcement saying, if you're not in your seats at 4 o'clock, which was 3 hours before game time, we're going to move your stuff. And people came back, I think, 2-3 hours later and were upset that their stuff had been moved, but they had left like a sweatshirt or like one of their little pat. And they're like, hey, hey, hey. And that's how crazy it was. I mean, it was packed. I couldn't even sit in the, you know, we have these two little tiny media seats behind the plate that Rhea and I have to sit in. And I couldn't even sit there. I was on the edge, but it was wild. It was an atmosphere, you know, strikingly similar to the Women's College World Series. And it was the second week of play for us. Anything else to add, Rhea, in terms of this week? I know we're really St. Pete heavy, but that's where you and I were.
Yeah, no, just, I mean, it's, you know, it seems like it's already been like 4 or 5 weeks, it's only been week two. But it was great. It was great to get down there. I'd recommend anyone ever make a pilgrimage. If you're doing the World Series, make this like, you know, a 1 year, maybe flip back and forth. So great. And the coverage was awesome by ESPN. I went back and watched some games that I didn't get to see and listen, and just really glad they invested so much in it, and it shows. And I think it's showing that when you do that, you get these kind of results, and that it'll it's worth the investment. So glad they did that.
Yeah. Speaking of going back and watching games, you just kind of sparked my memory. I actually went back to watch the Alabama Virginia Tech game this weekend. So those were huge games. Bama was 2-0, but to be honest, Virginia Tech put up a fight. Both Keely Richard and Lemley. What's Lemley's first name?
Emma Lemley.
Emma Lemley. Thank you. Emma Lemley. Watched her throw. Gosh, she's incredible. So, again, the ACC, we talk about this all the time, Rhea. The ACC is it's going to be tough this year. It's going to be a battle again. So head on over to the site, d1softball.com. We've got loads of notebooks up from the week. It'll give you what we learned. It'll give you our power rankings and what to watch heading into the weekend. I'll be out at Mary Nutter in Palm Springs. Crazy games that are be going on there. We'll give a little bit of a preview on that on the site. And let's just get on into our interview with national champion Huskies pitcher. I actually got to play against Danielle. We didn't even talk about that. And that's probably
because I did. I would have struck out.
Husky pitcher, you know, everything that we know, that I know from Team Canada, I think of Daniel Lorry. So Olympian bronze medalist. Let's head on over with our interview with Daniel Lorry. And now we are welcomed on the D1 softball podcast, Daniel Lorry, the legend that she is, UW pitcher, Olympian. She's a Canadian Olympic team. She's got a tattoo on her left arm. Just recently won the bronze medal with Team Canada. And she's one of our favorites in the booth. And we are all coming, the three of us, joined by Rhiannon Potke as well. We're all coming back from what a weekend in St. Pete. Danielle, thank you so much for joining us.
Of course. Yeah. I hope to be on more than one this year, you guys.
I think we can make that happen. Now, before we get into the real burning questions, which Rhea will get to because she's the true journalist here, my first question for you, Danielle, is anybody that has been following you and your social media wants to know, how's it going with the new puppy?
Oh, God. So random. Yeah, I pulled the trigger on that puppy on Friday night, and I think I was more nervous at the airport than I was in the national championship game. Cause I was like, could I be married at the end of the week? I don't know. Who gets a puppy without asking their husband? I do. And it's going good. It's going really good. Puppy's super sweet. And we named him Rip from Yellowstone. It's going to be, I will say this, I would not have got the puppy if I was going to be traveling every weekend for broadcasting. So I knew I was going to be doing games from home. So I was like, all right, mama can have a couple sleepless nights looking after the dog because I'm not going to be on the road every weekend. So, yes.
Well, so we'll welcome Rip, the new puppy. It's yes. a Labradoodle.
Golden Doodle.
Golden Doodle.
Yeah, medium Golden Doodle. He'll make an appearance at the end of the show.
Okay, love it.
On here.
Well, Ree and I were just down in Clearwater with you, mm-hmm. and we just wanted you to have on the podcast to get your take on what it was like being there. You know, it hadn't been a while since you've called a game, yeah. and you had more than a handful of games this past weekend. What are your immediate thoughts on St. Pete Clearwater Elite Invitational?
Yeah. And the puppy starts barking. I think I was a little bit overwhelmed at the very beginning, just because it had been 2 years. And the last time that I broadcasted with ESPN was this tournament in February of 2020, when we thought the Olympics was going to happen and everything was going to be smooth sailing. But that's not how it ended up. So, you know, I texted Meg Aronowitz after this, and I just remember saying to her, like, this is the first time since the Olympics where I just fully feel just lucky to be where I'm at. You know, I went through this weird kind of Olympic crash at the end. I mean, it was very awesome to win an Olympic medal, but I think Olympians go through these moments of like, wow, like now this is all done. Like now what? Like that grind of the last 5 years comes to a halt, and then it's family. And so I just went through like a weird transition. And this last weekend made me realize like how much fun I have in the booth. And it's almost like a dream job, you know, besides the prep work, which, you know, with what you do, like it takes so much time, but once you're in the booth, it's like, that's where the magic happens. And getting to witness a tournament like this with just the talent, the new teams, like it was the first time I got to see Valerie Cagle throw in person. Like there's just a difference between hearing the ball hit the mitt in person than watching on TV. There were so many like ebbs and flows to this weekend for me where I feel like I continue to keep trying to reiterate that on TV, because it's like our job as media is to make everything seem like such a big deal. But at the end of the day, these are athletes and it's week two, man. Like they're not in postseason form, nor should they be. Like for instance, Texas and Texas Tech were like 0-9 in this tournament. Nobody was predicting that. Like just little things like that, where you're like kind of taken back. And in a tournament like this, with this talent, like you're going to be fully exposed. But wouldn't you want to be at the beginning of the season to kind of figure out like, all right, what do we need to do to get us into a place where we can go into conference play and feel really strong? So I just felt like I continued to try to keep hammering that out to the audience that like, yeah, it's crazy that some of these things are happening, but you want to play the best. And that's what this tournament does. And we get softball on TV in February. And that like Florida State, UCLA game, Sunday night, prime time, like extra innings, like that stuff's special. And it's like, when you turn that on and you get to watch, like you can turn people into softball fans in an instant. And it's games like that. So very happy to be a part of it. And just excited to see how the rest of the season's going to be, you know?
Yeah. And you mentioned Valerie Cagle. So she's, you know, obviously one of the highly touted arms at Clemson. Mm-hmm. Two-way player that she had a great weekend per standards. Clemson had a couple, you know, tough games. Who else in terms of pitchers were you impressed with this weekend at the tournament?
I mean, for me, Danielle Williams, right, with Northwestern, I thought that game where they walked off UCLA was one of those where it just kind of gives you goosebumps that stay for a little bit. I felt like with Oklahoma State, like, you know what you're going to get with Kelly Maxwell, but I feel like there's just been so much pressure on Miranda Ellis to be this like savior to this program. And it's like, everyone expected her to go last weekend and be elite. And it's like, I think on the Sunday game, when I got to watch, it was the first time against Northwestern where she threw a full complete game and she continued to get better as the game went on and was high 60s throughout. Like, so for me, that was kind of the first time where I really got to see like her kind of rally and step up for a team. I dug the fact that UCLA looked like they had some solid help with, how is it pronounced? Holly Azevedo? Azevedo?
Yeah.
I mean, that's so important for them, right? Like, we all know, like, if you're trying to win a championship at the end of this, the game has evolved so much where you cannot do it with one arm. Like, it's just not what it used to be. So you need a solid number two. And I feel like that was kind of a cool thing to see. I mean, Washington's going to be interesting for me, right? Like, that's my alma mater. Love them. Gabby Plain, they're very fortunate to still have her, because if they don't have her, I don't think they are as strong of a team. Obviously, she has that Olympic experience. She's fifth year senior. She is what she is. So for me, for UW, it's going to be like, how are they going to pitch by committee and be able to get people to really have quality innings that can like compete against top 10 teams? And it's not always just Gabby, because I felt like last year going to Oklahoma, like, I'm not saying that Washington couldn't have beat Oklahoma, but I felt like she'd thrown so many innings that for her, it was like, all right, kind of tired, right? Like, we got to get through the big dog to get there. So I'd probably say those pitchers for me. It was kind of cool for me to even be able to see like Notre Dame. They had three quality pitchers, like Peyton Tidd. I got to see that two-way player, and she had a couple really good performances. Another highlight game that was really fun to call, which most wouldn't have thought right out of the gate, was the Notre Dame-Wisconsin, right? Like, they went into the seventh inning and Notre Dame came back and it was the last out at home plate. And I was just sitting up there like a complete pitcher's duel, like stuff like that, like gets me going. I love a ton of runs on the board, but like, to help continue to grow the game, people don't want to turn on the TV and it be like 9-1, right? Because they're going to change. But to be able to see a game going into the seventh with a play at home plate, like just little things like that are, you know, cool to witness as someone up in the booth and also when you turn on the TV. So there was like a lot of like great moments. I mean, you know what you're going to get with like a Georgina Coric, you know, with USF and Ken Erickson finally able to be with that team after 25 years of being with USA, which it was kind of crazy because I asked him that on TV and he got like really emotional and like couldn't finish the interview. And then it had me thinking, as someone that has competed with Canada, like, I feel like he probably hasn't gotten much credit, you know, like to a lot of people, like a silver medal isn't that good. And that man has dedicated more than enough of his life for the better of the program. And not everyone may like the way that things are done, but are you giving up 25 years of your life to like try to, you know, give to these athletes? So I just felt in that moment, like he deserved that praise of like, I hope you know how special that is that you've done that. And now you can fully commit to USF and help get them to where they need and be there with Coric on her last year. Like just little things like that. There was a lot of like little moments, like being able to ask Coach Tarr for a shout out for her mom, and her mom, you know, ended up passing away that next day. Like just crazy, you know, full circle moments.
Yeah, I think in terms of all those things that you get to kind of do in the booth, like Rhea and I are sitting watching the games behind the plate and don't get to listen to you all as much. And switching gears here, in terms of being in the booth, can you give people an idea of what it's like day in the life of what you do and how you prep and what goes into that? And what does your day look like when you're calling? I think you have three games one day.
Yeah, no, I had 11 games in 4 days, three in a row of 3-3-3, and then the last day two. You know, it's a marathon, not a sprint, and I need to remember that. And that's something that Meg is always really good at. Like, you don't want to go out and like show all your cards right out of the gate. And at the end of the day, like the prep is the most important part, because you never want to go into a game unprepared because you're going to be exposed on TV. But I mean, at the end of the day, like I try to get there close to 90 minutes before the game and just kind of get like my notes and stuff set up. The prep is the hardest part, because with that additional COVID year, majority of these teams are like 25 athletes and up, right? So it's like, I mean, USF's lineup was 31 athletes. I felt like it took me 6 hours to just even get like the proper spreadsheet for what I wanted. And I didn't even talk about 70% of the athletes. But at the end of the day, it's like, I always want to make sure that like I check off those boxes, because that's what makes me feel confident when I get into the booth. Same thing, like when we get on the field, right? Like back when we played, like we worked as hard as we did because we wanted to make sure we were fully prepared for whatever was thrown at us in the art of competition. So I kind of take it just as serious in the booth. Honestly, Tara, I felt like this is kind of the first time where I can, like, number one, continue to be as authentic as I want to be, but your girl can, like, walk the walk. Like, I literally played this game last year at the highest level and was a part of something so special. So to be able to, like, pull from that, like, I know at times people don't always want to hear, like, from an analyst, like, oh, this is what I did. But the difference is, like, I got to compete in an Olympic Games and go through that grind the last 5 years and was fortunate enough to obviously still be able to play in my 30s with a family and stuff. So it's just kind of cool to be able to, like, bring that into the booth. I do feel like that experience makes me not be as hardcore on, like the athletes and the umpires and, like, what I used to be. But I also think that's just evolving, right? Like, kind of figuring out, like, what we're good at and just being open and honest. And that's something that I will always continue to try to be when I get in the booth, because something that Meg had mentioned to me a couple of years ago was, like, you always want to make, you know, when you're up there, kind of be like you're sitting on the couch with someone watching a movie or watching a game, just eating popcorn and hanging out and making it low key, not trying to talk too much. Like, you want someone to be able to tune in and learn something, laugh a little and enjoy it. And I think for me, like, being able to crack a joke and, like, get someone to kind of, like, laugh, like, whoa, that was actually kind of funny. Like, that's what makes me smile, right? So it's like, I take a lot of pride in that and connecting with my partner. And I was lucky to be able to do that with Mark because we've had a lot of history together. We've done a lot of postseasons. The last one was JMU beating Michigan in 2019 at the regional. So it was kind of cool to be able to get back out there with him. And yeah, so a lot goes into it. But it's not like we need to hammer that out to the audience when they watch, you know, it's just, we need to be able to step up, talk about softball and bring in our experiences. And I'm just continuing to try to hopefully make it as pleasurable for the audience where they don't turn it on mute.
Yeah. Well, I think I speak for most of us and that we love your honesty. I think it's one of the most refreshing things to hear in a game, and that is one of my favorite things about you, Danielle. I think it's just a breath of fresh air, and your authenticity is something that we all appreciate. And speaking of authenticity, what another thing that is super important to you is authenticity in terms of body image and how girls think and speak to themselves, and really focus on, you know, kind of that internal dialogue on how we all speak to ourselves and what as body image or beauty, what that is. Why is that something that you focused on and something that's so important to you? Is that something that you struggled with earlier in your career and are bringing it kind of forward now? Why is that so important to you?
I mean, first and foremost, like, being a girl mom and being, you know, the same sex parent for kids is like I'm those little girls, like, role model. They're looking up to me on the daily. And after I had Madison, my first, I remember definitely, like, I gained a lot of weight. I was wicked insecure. I would say things about myself. I would talk to myself negatively in, like, bad ways. And then I started to kind of feel like I was, like, depressed. And I just birthed this child, and my life had shifted in the game. And so I had to come to terms with the fact that, like, sports has taught me a level of confidence that not many people get the opportunity to learn, right? Like, you learn it from a little kid, how hard the grind is and all of these things. But I was fortunate enough to, like, learn the mental game, but I learned it late with Revisa. Like, I almost wish that I would have gotten that handed to me, like, at my kid's age, to just be able to, like, understand how important things we say to each other. And so when I'm talking about stuff in the booth about, like, pitchers, like, when they have a bad performance or they go back into the dugout, like what is Texas saying to themselves right now? Like, is it like, oh my God, the season's done. Everyone's saying this. And it's just like, so for me, I really try to, like, stay in my lane of, like, at the end of the day, all we can control is, like, what we say to ourselves and the people we choose to have in our lives. And I will never be someone that says things in front of my children where my children think that that's okay, especially when it comes to talking bad about your body, your self-esteem, whatever it may be. So that's something that I've learned like over time. I mean, we all go through our things, right? Like high school was a rough at times with me being bigger, stronger, more athletic than all the guys. You know, the guys wanted to be friends with me because I was really good at sports and the girls were jealous of that. So the girls would say really nasty things and make fun of me for stuff. And I know that that's something that like my daughters may face because sports are going to be a huge part of their lives. So it's just continuing to pump in the right stuff in my kids' mindset of like, at the end of the day, like who we choose to be around is like what we reflect, right? Like our people and our friendships. So the people that are the ones that are nasty and negative, like, dude, no, wash your hands of that. But at the end of the day, like that's the world we live in. So the grind that we do allows for us to feel confident in moments, regardless of what anyone else thinks, right? And that's something I'm sure both of you can attest to. Like the older you get, it's almost like you become more confident because it's like, who the F cares what anyone thinks like about me, because they don't know me. And social media nowadays almost gives people this like insight to what you are and who you are and what you stand for. And it's like, no, that's maybe like 5% of who I am and what I'm about. So to me, it's like, if I put content out there for whatever it looks like on TikTok or Instagram, it's like, it needs to be for like those strong little girls that may not feel strong all the time, but can look at it and go, she's 200 pounds. She's won a national championship. She's been able to go to an Olympics. She thinks she's beautiful. All these things that society tells us that we're not, right? Like there's no women that they say walks around at 200 pounds that like is good looking to people or whatever it may be. BMI, I go to the doctor and it's like, they tell me I'm significantly overweight. Like all these things that I had to learn, take a breath. Like that's how people portray you to be, but that's not who you are. And my children have been a huge, you know, piece to that puzzle for me to just continue to remember like how we choose to speak to ourselves matters, because we're the only ones that have our back at the end of the day. So I'm just a believer in like continuing to keep putting that out there for the world and trying to be an example for my kids. They're going to do whatever they want to do, whether it's sports or not, but the mindset and the mentality is something that I want to continue to keep hammering home for them. Because that to me is just important for everything, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And I think we talk a lot about this. I think it's really important that you, as a role model in all those roles, as a national champion, as an Olympian, you do have that platform and are able to allow young girls to see it's okay to be strong and athletic and yeah, not all the things that are on the front covers of magazines. And but what I really want, I picked up on is the late Ken Revisa. And you did some work with him. What did you, I mean, for those of you who don't know, incredible sports psychologist, we worked with him a little bit at UCLA, and gosh, he was just so brilliant at what he did and just made you think in ways that you could never thought possible. What were your biggest takeaways in working with Ken, and what are the things, like, because he would give us little kind of anecdotes to use on the field or what it was. What did you take away from him and working with him?
You know, he traveled with us that Olympic year, and the summer before he was with Canada a little bit as well. We kind of got to talk with him at Washington, but I will say this, the first 2 years at Washington, like mentally, I was really good on the field as far as like being talented. All right, Rip, let's shut it down. I was confident in my abilities, don't get me wrong, but I'd never really like worked on the mental game. I'd never really worked on like going through the mental dry reps of things in my head, like what I'm saying to myself, the game routine, like, am I doing the same thing every time? Like, am I looking at my focal point? Am I understanding my heart rate when pressure is on? Like, how am I evaluating that situation? And at times it would just be like, okay, give me the ball back. Like, I'm fine. But like Ken, as you know, was so big on like, take a breath and slow the game down. The best athletes in the world are the ones that are able to like feel the pressure, let it in, but slow it down. Because ultimately, like if we try to speed it up and be any different than we already are, it's just not going to work. And that was something that like I was humbled a lot by with him. And we did some stuff at the Canada Cup in 2007, the year before the Olympics. And he watched my games, and then he sat with me and would talk with me about things that he saw. And at first I got wicked, like, offended. Like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm really good. Like, I feel like I'm fine. And once you started to break down, like, consistency with your routine, you get the ball back, you do the same thing. You walk to the edge of the mound. He said, you're pitching and you're not breathing. Like, you're just pitching and you're hammering and you're trying to go fast. And the more aware you are and the more present you are for one pitch at a time, opposed to just 100 pitches at a time, the more in control of the situation you are. I mean, another thing, which, like, just like being able to flush it, right? Like, because bad things are going to happen to pitchers more than anyone. You're going to give up home runs. You're going to lose games. But, like, how are you able to get over that? And that's the hardest thing, I think, sometimes as a pitcher, especially back, I feel like when I played, when you're playing these back-to-back games, especially, like, I think about that UMass game, like losing that UMass game in the morning and then having to come back and play that 15 inning game. Yeah, you can have that. Like, that's the hardest thing as an athlete, to have 30 minutes to turn that around. So it's the mental grind of what you're learning and what we're saying to ourselves. And that was really important. I would not have been the person that I was to help that national championship team if it was not for the life lessons I learned with Ken, and also the humbling moments of the Olympic Games in 08. It was a lot of immaturity, right? And I think the coolest thing for me was being able to go into these Olympics, and there was a moment that was the most pressure-filled moment that I've ever felt in my life. And it was that Japan game with the clock winding down and I'm calling time, bases loaded, we're less than 5 seconds. Like, any other pitcher at times I think would freak out and walk in the run, but it was like in that moment, it's just like owning it. I just got to pitch it. Like, and I think being able to like understand the magnitude of that, but what allows for you to thrive in some of those moments is just respecting the work that went into it. And if you can do everything in your power to set yourself up, like when you go into those moments where it's hard, yeah, it's hard, but like, all the work that went into it is what leads you to thrive in that moment, but to also be okay with both outcomes, right? And in my position as a closer at times, it was like, I have to live and die and be completely okay with both outcomes. And going into the bronze medal game, like coming in the fifth inning with, you know, Torrey Vidalis up and a runner on third and the winning run on third. And it's like, we're going to win or lose this game on my watch. And that's a lot of pressure. So it's like your daily habits leading up to your training of the last 4 years, every single day that you're doing something, we're constantly putting ourselves in that mindset of knowing that like there may be a point when we're tested. It doesn't matter what it looks like. And so every single thing for me that I did, it was like, it's not that I'm the fastest runner on the team or the heaviest lifter or all those things, but it's this constant battle between my mindset of like preparing myself to the best of my ability. So I believe that I'll be able to stand up no matter what. But at the end of the day, this team's looking at me being someone that comes into games. And the only way that like I could even live with us losing to Japan and it being on a pitch that I threw was that I've done everything in my power to prepare myself. And that's all we can control as athletes. We don't know if we're going to win or lose games, but we can control how hard we choose to work for the better of the team. And for those moments where shit's hard, man, like sports are hard. And that's why they're so beautiful, because it's like, not only are we thriving in those moments, but like our life for the rest of our lives, like the life lessons that we learn throughout that grind are things that like make me a better wife, make me a better mom, make like all these different things. I am by no means the woman that I am if I didn't play softball or basketball or soccer or volleyball, and just the lessons that I learned throughout all of it. But my biggest piece of advice to people is like, start doing that mental preparation now. Read your books, read Heads Up Baseball by Ken Revizza. Like, put yourself in those situations and really try, right? Like, talent will take you so far. But every team, I feel like, that really does win that national championship, there is just this difference between like that mental, like mental competitiveness. And you think about Oklahoma losing to JMU, very well could have went like, oh, boo-hoo. But it's like, okay, the stuff that they've done to prepare themselves is what allowed for them to be able to come back and fight and win a championship. And that's like a fearless leader, obviously, in Gasso. But I mean, their team is stacked. We know that. But yeah, the mental game is the difference between the good and the great.
I mean, I couldn't agree more with you on that one. Obviously, there are tons of talented teams across the country and that can, you know, throw strikes and get base hits. But I think at the end of the day, those that the last eight that end up in Oklahoma City do have that intangible piece, that mental toughness that you can't really quite measure, but you can see it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what Oklahoma has last year. They have it. Think again this year from what we've seen. I mean, like you said, we're only in week two. But I mean, Daniel, I think we could talk to you probably for, I know I could talk to you for hours and hours, but just want to get kind of the last kind of final thoughts from you. You talked about Ken's book, Heads Up. What else would you recommend to young softball players, whether that be training, whether that be how you deal with your coach, whether it be what to read, kind of, we know we talked about routine. What would you recommend for young softball players that are, you know, obviously watching all these great games on TV and wanting to be kind of the next Michaela Edenfield or the Megan Framo or the Kinsley Washington that they got to see on ESPN, what would you recommend to them?
First and foremost, like, you're no greater than the team. You're not better than anyone else on your team. And I think sometimes, like, these athletes are, like, built a little differently than we are, right? Like, they come in thinking at the end of the day, it's like, I feel like what I've really learned and why it was special for me to go back with Canada is because I felt like for the first time, like, I really followed my advice and, like, I'm as good as, like, the worst player on my team. Like, how are we going to be able to elevate and get us all on the same page and be very vulnerable and very authentic? And, like, how can we connect on that level? And I think that's something that is so important for me. I'm very big on, like, I loved reading a lot of the USA Soccer women's books, like Megan Rapinoe, Hope Solo, Carly Lloyd. And a couple of years ago, we'd be on bus trips driving 9 hours. And I literally hammered out Carly Lloyd's book in a night. And I just remember feeling fully inspired by somebody else's story. And, like, we're never too good to take advice from coaches. We're never too good to look at somebody else and go, like, wow, that person inspires me. If we're looking at other people and we're jealous or envious of what they have, then, dude, step up and be better, because clearly you got issues. And that's a hard thing sometimes with females, right? It's like, we can kind of feel like, oh, I want that. Then find a way to dig deep and push yourself so you're able to, like, blossom to whatever it is you want to be. And women's sports allows for us to be that. But the most important thing is, like, being respectful to the coaches. It's different because that transfer portal and so many people are coming and they're going. And it's like, I just felt so lucky to be a part of that 09 team because I felt like we were, like, the strongest team mentally. Like, all of us were on the same page, the good, the bad, the ugly. In Canada with us, it was just, we were very vulnerable with each other. And I think that's something to think about. Like, are you picking a teammate up when they are literally in the dumps? Like, are you someone that's, you know, I'm a pitcher and third baseman makes two errors and we lose the game. Like, am I not talking to them, or am I going to them and being like, dude, I got you. It's totally okay. Because that's how you build trust. And that's how you allow for your teams to continue to grow. And that's something that, at the beginning of my career, I was not so good at, but I can honestly say, finishing up last summer, like, that was my biggest strength, connecting with people in their darkest days and letting them know that you are there. There's a level of respect that needs to go across the board for your parents, for your coaches, and for all of that. You know, it's so important, because I think me going back to do this Olympic thing made me realize, like, how many people were on my side and how many people truly helped this Olympic thing even be possible for me. And without them, there's no way I can do it, right? So it's like, I'm very much about constantly telling the people that mean the most to me, like, how grateful and thankful I am for them. Because at the end of the day, everyone's supporting, like, you and your dream, and they don't get the lights, they don't get the medal, they don't get that. They just get to be there and support you because they love you. So I think it made me feel stronger in those moments. And when we won, I think it was, like, the first time besides my children where I was like, the world stood still, because it was like, just so many people led to that moment happening, not only for our country and the ones that came before us, but for me to be in that moment. Like, that's hard. A mom, I work, I have a husband, like, I have these children. But at the end of the day, I continued to put my team in the forefront of my mind because I was hopeful that something great would happen. Who knew if the Olympics was even going to happen? Right? But it was like, at the end of the day, the only thing I can control is how I treat people, how hard I choose to work, and the leader that I want to be. And at the end of the day, like, you're kind of born into that leadership role, right? You can't just be like, oh, I'm going to be a leader. Like, it doesn't work that way. Leader, it's your daily actions. It's how you treat people. It's how you choose to work, that when the moments are tough and your heart's pounding, are you willing to step up? And you just kind of see the difference between athletes that way. But sorry, I went off on a tangent with all of that. I know I'm talking a lot, but there's just so many like special things that lead to all of it. But respect your teammates, man. Never talk down to someone. You may not like what your coach has to say, and you don't have to always like it, but you got to respect it. And you got to work hard, because you've never made it in the sport. You just never have.
You know, I think you're spot on in terms of just a different type of athlete, different type of situation. I don't know if you remember back in the day, I don't remember anyone really going in that transfer portal. And if they did, it was few and far between.
And it must have been bad.
Yeah, it must have been really, really bad. But I know we've seen it across all sports. And I think that also attributes to the growth of our sport of softball. I think, you know, we're growing. And one of the biggest things that, you know, Ree and I have talked about this, I've talked about this with other people across the media, is that, you know, our sport is growing, and we are going to have to start unturning some rocks that we're not used to doing. And I think the softball world and the softball coaches and staffs are starting to find that out, and that we are on the main stage at this point. Like, we were just on ESPN primetime on Sunday night. And I think those are all great things that, you know, young players can kind of aspire to. But at the end of the day, I think it's just be a good teammate, you know?
Yeah, very important.
It sounds really easy, but I don't know that it is as easy as it sounds. And I think that's a core belief that, you know, we can all kind of hang our hats on.
You never know what someone is going through, right? It's like, that's like the biggest thing, like someone's family or significant other or their husband or wife, whatever it may be. It's like, you don't know what the hell they're going through, yet they're still trying to show up for you and the team. And so it's like being able to like have those conversations. And I remember like sparking a conversation last summer when we were in Marion, Illinois, about like my mental health stuff. Like, I was not good. I was like, I got to go home. Like, and I didn't end up going home, but like, I had to call a team meeting and be like, yo, this is where I'm at, man. Like, I need 2 days to get the hell away from all of this, or like, I am not going to be able to compete at this Olympic Games with still truly understanding my why and having that like legit competitive fire in my gut. But that vulnerability that I show to the rest of the team in that moment, where not a lot of people want to show that because they should be happy to be on this Olympic roster, that's not how it should be. We just need to be happy that we're there. We need to really be in tune with what the hell's going on, because we're being asked to do something, number one, that no one's ever done. But the days that we were trying to do day in and day out, and that workload was so much that it was like, I almost didn't know how to handle it. So for me, it was like, I got to let these other 18 women in so they can know that I'm not above the line. I'm not good. I'm not healthy. And little did I know that there were 7 other women on my team that were completely struggling to the point where like, they didn't even want to be there. And that conversation allowed for us as a team to not only gel, but us to go to our coaches and be like, yo, we ain't good. Okay. So we need to figure this out. And it's that those trusting moments through hardcore vulnerability that allowed for us to be like, okay, nice, we got each other's back. And it's so competitive because there's only 15 athletes that can be named to a roster. And it's like, I want to go to the Olympics, but I like so many things. But at the end of the day, I was like, I'm not good, and I got to tell someone, because I can't see my family, I can't see my children, I can't see my husband. It's COVID, we can't go into stores. I'm living in a dorm room at you know, the Saluki's dorm room with this tiny little bed. My body felt like it was going to just be destroyed every minute. I was like, is this the Olympic dream? No. But those hard moments that we had are like what allow for you to just like be proud to have done it, right? Like, you know, it's never easy, always worth it.
And I think that vulnerability piece is something that is hard for a lot of athletes, and something I think in the past that maybe wasn't, you know, championed or wasn't encouraged. Cause I think that was something that, you know, you just kind of put up or shut up. You know, you just kind of just did your work. You put your head down. You, like you said, you should be happy to be there. And I think what is great about this next generation is that vulnerability piece and the focus on mental health, because yeah, a lot of people don't know how difficult it is to be an athlete. They think it's all, you know, rose color. It's a rose color glasses type of deal. Like, I think, oh, you get all this free gear. You get to travel. You know, you get to play in front of all these people and you get to work out every day and, you know, you're fit and all these things. And I don't know that that mental health piece is something that they really actually understand.
Because not a lot of people are willing to put in the work to do it, yet they have an opinion about it. And those are always the ones where you have to remember, like, why am I, like, I'm someone that if there's negativity on any platform, whether it's TikTok or Instagram or whatever, I will not engage with it. Because you know what? Like, you don't know me. And you think you do, but it can be very easy for someone to comment on something, whether it's a bad game or you give up a home run and you lose the game, like death threats and all of these different things that people, I think, don't understand that the athletes have to deal with because of the true pressures of the university and the sport. Now athletes are able to get paid in college, like all these things, but engaging with negativity does nothing. It only digs you deeper in the hole of negativity because you're never going to get that person to agree with you. So wash my hands of it, because you don't know me and I don't know you, yet I'm still willing to always put myself out there for the world. And I will continue to do that. But I remember, like, when the video of me and Maddie, and she was running with me, and Good Morning America posted it just before the Olympics on all their social media platforms. And it was like hammer down. Like, I've never gotten hate like that on any level, whether it was people saying they're calling to get my kids taken away, death threats to me. And it, like, I didn't respond to anyone. And it made me realize, like, okay, number one, this doesn't take away from the mother that I am, because I'm fully confident in what I bring to the table. But I was like, I got to get off social media for the Olympics. Like, I need to be able to give myself these six games and this experience, because the game deserves that. And I deserve that. And I think sometimes we try to put so much out there for everyone else to see, but at the end of the day, it's like, are we in the moment? Like, are we truly in the moment and enjoying it for what it was? And I'm so proud of myself for making that decision to do that. And we did that as a team, because it can be really easy to be carried away by how everyone else feels, yet no one has done your grind and no one is doing it. So being able to, like, not respond or engage with people that, like, a lot of people don't, yet they have an opinion, right? So less is more. Less people in your circle is more, in my opinion.
Well, love it, Danielle. Honestly, would love to have you on whenever you want to come back. I know you're obviously calling loads and loads of games, your mom, and you got a new puppy.
I need to try to find him.
I don't know if you noticed, but in the middle, Red jumped up here. So Red's just sleeping behind me.
I know, I saw. It was so sweet.
I feel so left out. I have no dog to bring in. Like, I don't even
No, really, worry, we'll get you a dog after the next tournament. I'll show up with a dog and hand it over to you.
Yeah, then I really have the responsibility. I can't, yeah, there. If I can raise a dog, I guess maybe a child, but let's not try.
Dogs are way easier. I can leave the puppy in the crate for like 3 hours. Cannot do that with a baby. Can't do
that. Child services would come if you did that. That would be a child service. I would probably call them, Danielle, if you caged your child.
All right. Well, that's Danielle Laurie. Thank you so much, Danielle. Next podcast, I want to do beauty secrets too, because Danielle is like beauty secrets queen. Like, yeah. I
need hacks, man. Danielle,
I need some mega tips, Danielle. Mega tips. We'll do. That's like a season project we have in the off season. Like, Danielle helps Re get like her stuff together.
Yeah. Let's do that. YouTube. It all on YouTube. Maybe you can help me out to learn how to golf, because I'm hoping to golf a little more next fall when I have two kids in full-time school. So yeah,
that can happen. Always game for some golf. All right, Danielle Laurie, thank you so much for joining us on the D1 Softball podcast.
Thanks, guys.
Well, that's it for the D1 Softball podcast. Danielle Laurie, could talk to her for hours and hours. She could talk to us for hours and hours. Love that about her. Got kids running around, dogs running around, and just love her authenticity and everything she stands for. It's just, she is a breath of fresh air, and I think she's incredibly great for our game and incredibly great to have her in the booth with her insight and all the experience she's had over the years.
Just amazing. I love listening to her. I was very just let you guys, because just letting her talk was the best thing. I mean, it's amazing all her perspective and just the different angles she comes at things. And one of my favorite analysts because of her, just her raw honesty. She's not condescending. She's not mean, but female athletes need people to be, they need to treat them like men in the sense that we're not afraid to, if they do something wrong on the field, that doesn't say anything about them as humans, that's sports. And she does that. She's not going to be the cheerleader every time. She's very legit and honest. And I love just her style of analyzation. I'm so glad she's back in the booth.
I couldn't agree more. So that's it for the D1 Softball Podcast. Head on over to the site, d1softball.com. Like, subscribe, send us an email at info@d1softball.com. You can tweet Ree or myself. We know that the top 25 rankings caused lots of stir this week. So we're actually going to have a top 25 chat next week because of it. So stay tuned for that. You guys can go on the website. You'll be able to ask us all kinds of questions on why teams are where and what kind of goes through it. So that is going to be really fun next week. The top 25 chat. We'll let you know once we've got that all taken care of. But now if you have any questions, you can just ask us directly instead of just asking who the heck does these rankings. Yes.
We agonize for hours, so it's not like we just throw them together in like 2 seconds, but hey, that's fun. It's fair. I love that people care enough. That's awesome. They're hard to do, and that's a great problem to have.
And what I want people to remember is that the four of us have no skin in the game, whereas in we don't coach for certain conferences. So if we, you know, have certain conferences or certain teams at certain places, it makes your RPI better. You know, we're not SIDs just voting for, you know, certain things, and that are, you know, SIDs have jobs that they have to actually watch games. And you've got four people that watch probably more games than most of the country voting on these rankings. And again, let's remember, they're just rankings. They mean nothing between the white lines.
They're just conversation starters. We take them very seriously, but you know, we're human and it's a game and stuff changes, and it's a rapidly, every week's a different week and every week changes. And that, you know, we try to make sure they reflect that. We're not going to project if you're doing bad, you know, hey, but I love it. It's hard. And I'm really glad it's hard, because it used to be way too easy. And that means that the sport's not good. So let's hope it still get arguments, because that's a good thing for the sport. Just be civil. That's all I ask. Just be civil.
All right. Well, that's it for the D1 Softball Podcast. We'll see you all next time.